Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
The NFL draft officially arrives. First round will be tonight, starting at 8 o'clock Eastern in Nashville, Tennessee, my hometown. We are doing a live show from 6 to 7 Central in the hour beforehand. So in addition to these 3 hours you've been able to hear me this morning, I'll also be doing an hour on television later today. I'll be doing an hour on television, too. I'll be doing Lock It In, as I always do on FS1. From 4:30 to 5:30 Eastern, and then I'll be running over to Nissan Stadium where the Titans play their games, and we have an outdoor live stage, I believe, set up where we'll be doing the show. I haven't seen it, but I'm told it's going to be a pretty cool setup if you're going to be downtown where reportedly hundreds of thousands of people are going to be. That potentially could be very, very fun and will be kind of wild. So hopefully the weather will hold out, maybe some rain showers coming through. What exactly it will look like this evening, who knows exactly, but there may be some delays if the weather is bad enough because it's an outdoor draft, and Friday and Saturday look good. But we may get some rain tonight on draft night. So that is going on. Should be a lot of fun. We'll talk with Chad Withrow in a bit. We had a mock draft early in the show. It's been a tradition we've kind of established on this show where we allow the listeners to call in and pick the entire first round. Last year, we got 8 of 32 of the picks right. This year, I don't think we're going to do as well. We had some bad early drafters that threw us off our game. But we'll see. I feel pretty good about the first three in our projected draft, maybe even the first four, with Kyler Murray, Nick Bosa, Quinnen Williams, Josh Allen potentially all going there. So we will see how that continues to shake out as we move ahead. But that is the direction that we are moving so far. A lot of drama about where Dwayne Haskins is going to go. So far, no reports that the Cardinals are wavering on Kyler Murray that have been really reliable. There's been lots of scuttlebutt about that, but Kyler Murray still seems to be going number one. So the drama of the NFL draft now surrounding Dwayne Haskins, now surrounding Daniel Jones, Drew Locke. What do the Redskins do? What do the Giants do? And how many teams will move aggressively as this scenario plays itself out? Last night, we had an incredible ending if you were not watching, and we had double overtime between the Carolina Hurricanes and the Washington Capitals to put a kind of a bow on one of the wildest first rounds in NHL history. I believe we have audio of what it sounded like when that series finally came to a close. The Carolina Hurricanes went down 0-2, fought back to tie it up at 2-2, lost to go down 3-2, came back to tie it up 3-3, and last night in double overtime, finally got their first series lead, the only one that matters, winning their fourth out of seven in that opening round contest against the Stanley Cup defending champion Washington Capitals, and this is what it sounded like.
And through the slot, and back up Terrifying and Williams.
That is the way it sounded last night as the Carolina Hurricanes knock out the Washington Capitals. As a result, just pure chaos and bedlam. Top two seeds, both sides out. Who knows what's going to happen? I'm on the St. Louis Blues. I think maybe they get it done. But that's what took place last night in the NHL. In all of the big news in the world of the NBA, look, the Rockets held on. They didn't look very good. They didn't play very well. They were downright sloppy. But they held on to beat the Jazz in five games, advance to the Western Conference semifinals, where The expectation was, I went to bed. I'm going to be honest with you. It was 41-37 at the end of the first quarter. I don't know, about 10:30 at night by that time, 10:15, whatever it was. I turned off the television, felt good about the Warriors' chances to win that game like I did before it started. I was stunned this morning when I woke up and saw that the Warriors lost last night to the Clippers. I imagine many of you are stunned by that as well. They had only lost one game. Which is wild to think about. The Warriors had under Steve Kerr at home prior to this series, where they have now lost two games. The Clippers have beaten the Warriors twice in this scenario. Totally unexpected. It has been messy indeed. And so, as a result, as you break down the direction that we are headed in the NBA playoffs, I think basically the NBA Finals is Warriors against Rockets, assuming the Warriors get it done and win in Staples Center in Game 6, which I think they will do. But all is not right in Warriors Kingdom, and I'm not sure exactly what is awry, but I think the Rockets are going to beat the Warriors in the second round, and if that happens, man, we have got a wide-open NBA playoff. Certainly in the Eastern Conference without LeBron there, somebody is going to emerge different than LeBron in the Eastern Conference. Who knows if it's going to be the Sixers, who will be going up against the Toronto Raptors in one side of that bracket, other side the Boston Celtics taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. So everything potentially wide open, maybe in the NBA. Not as wide open as it is in the NHL, where there seems to be no rhyme or reason in what direction things are headed there. But just on the horizon, that is what is out there to contemplate. Any shockers that are going to happen in the NFL draft? I am curious about this. To me, the ultimate shocker would be if Kyler Murray doesn't go number one overall. And that would really kind of throw things into an uproar. And again, there's been a little bit of scuttlebutt about it. I thought it was strange yesterday. Kyler Murray didn't show up for the charity event in Nashville that everybody else showed up for. He arrived late, and I don't know if that means there's some behind-the-scenes drama about whether or not the Cardinals are going to take him. Here's my perspective on this decision for the Cardinals. I think they have to be wavering at least a little bit because of my prom scenario. And if you've heard my prom scenario, you know what I'm talking about. Just about everybody. In fact, it's prom season right now, and there's lots of high school kids riding into school this morning. And you may well have experienced this, certainly if you are older. But prom is about, it's a little bit like the draft. Prom is about maximizing your best possible draft candidate while also making sure that you end up with somebody good. Let me put it into context. You may not be able to go, if you're a guy, with the best-looking girl in your class. You know that. She's got a boyfriend. She's out of your league. Somebody else is going to ask her. But you also don't want to end up with a girl that is at the low end of your draft board, right? You want to maximize game theory. You want to maximize your candidate. And by the way, it can be the same thing for girls. You don't want to go with the guy. You may not be able to go with the starting quarterback on the football team, but you also don't want to go with the guy who is, you know, at the very bottom of your draft board. You want to maximize your ability, but at the same time, you don't want to leave a better candidate on the board. And so, almost like in prom season, if the Arizona Cardinals know that Kyler Murray they can have, but nobody else really seems to want Kyler Murray, and maybe, just maybe, that's making the Arizona Cardinals kind of question their decision-making. Because if they didn't take Kyler Murray number one overall, he might end up being drafted 15th. He might go 20th. And so a part of the Arizona Cardinal decision-making process has to be, notwithstanding the fact they got Cliff Kingsbury, notwithstanding the fact that Kyler Murray may be the best fit for them, they got to be thinking somewhat, hey, what if we traded back to 7 or 8 and still got Kyler Murray and picked up another first-round pick? That's got to be the way they're thinking right now. Now, the question is, does anybody really need to or want to move up in the top 10? Maybe not. Is Nick Bosa enough of a desire? Quinnen Williams, there's not really that signature player that everybody feels like they have to have. And most of the time when you move up in the top 10, I think we were talking about this yesterday, 8 of the 10 times it's happened in the recent history, it's been to take a quarterback. And I don't think anybody out there, if you like Drew Lock, if you like Dwayne Haskins, if you like Daniel Jones or Kyler Murray, really feels like there's a slam dunk, this guy should be the number one overall pick draft candidate. And so I think that's the drama of this year's draft, is that you're just really not sure how or where you have on your draft board a situation here where you feel like, man, I don't know necessarily if you're the Arizona Cardinals whether you're reaching if you take Kyler Murray number one overall. Now, here's the overall truth. And by the way, this is something that I think the Giants are debating as well, because the Giants have the number 6 and they have the number 17 pick. I think the Giants are trying to decide, hey, we need help. We got a lot of needs. We could go out and get a really good defensive player at 6 and probably still get our quarterback at 17. If they like Daniel Jones, they think he might be there at 17, although there seems to be some discussion that the Washington Redskins might be willing to take him at 15. If you like your quarterback, my position pretty simply and straightforward is this. You can never overrate him on the draft board. If your quarterback ends up being a stud, nobody goes back and says, I can't believe that insert team here drafted insert quarterback at whatever position. Nobody ever says it. Nobody ever looks around and says, oh my God, what were they thinking? And so I would be, you know, a little bit hesitant at the idea, if I'm the Cardinals or I'm the Giants, with trying to have your cake and eat it too. But I think certainly that has to be a big part of the discussion going on in their draft rooms now that draft day has arrived. I'll be down at the draft. I can't wait. We've opened a brand new bar. If you're going to be downtown, Nashville Sporting Club, 411 Broadway. If you got on the NFL Network, you can see our sign directly behind the NFL Network. All their draft coverage. Boom, there's our bar in the back. It's opening today, downtown Nashville. Potentially 500,000 people expected to be in downtown Nashville for the NFL draft. That sounds like an insane number to me, but I think when you see it on television, they are shutting down the main street in Nashville, Broadway. I think it is going to be shoulder to shoulder, almost impossible to move on the street during the draft. We'll see whether or not I'm correct. If you are going to be downtown, you can come watch me. It shouldn't be as crowded on the other side of the river where the Titans are. You're right downtown on the other side of the river if you're not familiar with Nashville. We'll be there from 6 to 7 Central doing a live show. Should be pretty awesome. What you got for me, Danny G?
So you know how recently Russell Wilson, after signing that huge $140 million deal, he thanked his O-line by giving them each Amazon stock?
Yeah.
Are you going to give everyone on the OutKick crew stock in the bar?
No. No. Bars are risky, right? An investment in a bar is a little bit risky. Now, I got the best guys in all of Nashville. They have opened a ton of hugely successful places, and I'm just a small part of it, right? Like, I'm just a silent partner. I'm excited to. I think every guy at some point in time thinks, I'd like to have an ownership stake in a bar.
Yeah.
I'm not Jay-Z. You know, sitting around out there claiming that he's an owner of the Nets when he owned whatever it was, like 0.006% of the. I've got real money in this thing, usually my wife.
Do we get free drink tickets?
Free tickets? No. I mean, look, I do not. I have zero diva tendencies. I mean this 100%. Like, I will stand in line anywhere. I feel bad asking for favors. I don't like doing anything different. The only thing I do is I will have a booth tonight for the draft. Now, I'll have my family with me tonight. I'm taking my kids. I'm excited to, like, let them experience the draft. And then on Friday, I will have a booth too. But I will pay for everything that I consume. But, you know, being an owner of a bar, I think the one benefit you can get is if you want a table, you get a table. So I will pretty much have a table for the rest of my life, I think, in the bar that we're opening. But that's the only like kind of diva VIP treatment that I would request.
You got to pay your bill. You got to keep the business.
Can't be giving away alcohol, rate. Danny. Don't you watch Bar Rescue?
I will say this: this is a 4-story bar that we're opening. All right, so the first floor is we got a restaurant. It's going to be open from 7 a.m. to 3 a.m. So 20 hours a day, if my math is correct. There on the second floor, we got an awesome sports bar where we have axe throwing, like legitimate axe throwing. Like, I mean, it's like an old school sports bar.
What? That's not safe.
Axe throwing. Axe throwing has become popular. You can target, you can win games. Like, it's awesome. Third floor is a hotel. So we have like a boutique hotel built into the bar restaurant. and the rooms are phenomenal. Right downtown on Broadway. If you've ever been to Nashville, like the main thoroughfare, we're between 4th and 5th Avenue. Like, I mean, again, if you put on the NFL Network right now, you will see our bar in the background behind the NFL Network. Do you guys have it on right now?
Yeah, we do. And what kind of supervision does it take for axe throwing?
We've got guys up there. You have to sign waivers. Again, it's fun if you haven't done it before.
Who can
and
you throw
the fourth
at?
Floor, you have targets. There's like cages, and we have targets. So, I mean, it's pretty awesome. It's set up well. It is very cool. So I think that is going to be pretty outstanding. And then on the fourth floor, we got a huge rooftop. Biggest rooftop in downtown Nashville. If you have ever been out in Nashville, what has become really popular over the last 4 or 5 years is we have pretty good weather 9 months of the year-ish. And so rooftop, you can look out, and I'll be up there. I mean, I'll tweet out a picture, I mean, to kind of give you a sense. I'm sure there'll be a lot of aerial shots as well. To me, ultimately, what's going on for Nashville is the city is auditioning for a Super Bowl. And the expectation is at some point in time that the city is going to have to replace the Titan Stadium. It's about 20 years old, and there is a strong cadre of people who want to build a retractable roof stadium. And if that happens, then I think Nashville will get a Super Bowl. I think they'll get the Final Four. I think they'll get the college football playoff. All those things would happen, but you have to build a retractable roof because in February, a decent chance it would be too cold. And the NFL doesn't really want to play cold weather Super Bowls other than the one that they did in New York. So I think that's what this is. I think this is the NFL saying, okay, Nashville, can you handle a big event like this? And we'll see tonight. I think it's going to go pretty well. You can't control the weather. Looks like there may be some rain showers, so that at least may dampen the crowd somewhat. But anyway, bars opens today. People can check it out, the Downtown Sporting Club. Again, you can see the big sign right outside. It's pretty awesome. So check it out.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
John Morosi is ready for us, joins us every single Thursday. A lot of times going to be breaking down baseball as the lead, but man, the chaos in the first round of the NHL playoffs is unlike anything we may have ever seen before, John Morosi. Is that an exaggeration, or do you kind of buy into it as well, that this is just unbelievable?
Well, good morning, Clay. And certainly, I can't recall anything like this. The amount of long games, and of course, as you look back at last year, the four teams we saw in the conference finals are all now eliminated, including one of them, the defending champions, or the Capitals, in dramatic fashion yesterday. Game 7, double overtime, third longest Game 7 in NHL history, as Kenny Albert told us on the air last night. So it just the amount of upsets that we've seen, the drama, the Game 7 two nights ago there where the Sharks are down 3-0 in the third period and come back and tie it, take the lead, and then actually lose the lead in the last minute and win in overtime. Just chaos, upsets, and really at this point in time, it is anyone's Stanley Cup to win.
It is indeed. Who would you even make as the favorites if you were picking right now and trying to contemplate this situation?
I would say this. The St. Louis Blues are the team that I like the best right now, and that's because I've got a little bit of a larger sample size on them. They've been playing so well since basically the middle part of the season. They were left for really certainly going to miss the playoffs midway through the season. They fired their coach. There's some changes there, and really just became a different hockey club in the last couple of months. And they've been playing. They've really been, I think, playing as well as anybody in the league since about the first of the year. And so for them to come through and be able to win in the first round against I thought a really good Winnipeg team that I thought was going to be a possibility to make the Stanley Cup final. Seeing all that come together and the way they played, I like St. Louis to be the Stanley Cup champion for the first time, by the way, ever in their franchise history. But this is a year, Clay, where if you are a fan of a team that they've been waiting for them to have a chance, like the Columbus Blue Jackets, this is your year to now say, listen, anything's possible. We can win the Stanley Cup this season.
Yeah, you know, on Lock It In, I picked the Blues as well at the beginning of this week. I think they have a really good chance now. I think anybody who's left among these eight has a really good chance. But the way they're playing, the goaltending that they're getting, it's pretty outstanding. What did you think? Because we have a lot of people who listen in Vegas and San Jose area. What did you think of the call to give the five-minute major in Game 7 late that seems to have swung the outcome of that series and certainly of that Game 7?
To me, I would say this, that a five-minute major under those circumstances, I think it was the right call. I mean, by the book, that is a penalty. But to me, the way that you have to call those games there in those biggest moments of the postseason, I think at the end of the day, was a penalty. You got to call it and then accept the consequences from there and live with the fact that maybe there's going to be some criticism afterward. But to me, that's a penalty.
Is it good or bad for the NHL to have had as many upsets in the first round as they had overall for the league?
It's a great question. I think, Clay, to me, that I would say there's a lot of parity in the league. There always has been in the NHL. We've always seen a lot of upsets, and that to me is a good thing. I think it allows teams, and as I kind of mentioned a moment ago, it allows fan bases to begin the playoffs and feel like there's hope. I live, as you know, in Michigan, and there was not really any idea when the Pistons entered the playoffs against the Bucks that they were going to have a chance in the first round. So that there was nothing really to look at that and say, well, maybe there's a way that they can win. Hockey, though, is just totally different. You can see eight seeds winning and beating top seeds. We just saw the defending Stanley Cup champions go down last night. So the amount of upsets and chaos, I think, in the NHL is always healthy and good. You lose maybe some of your big ratings teams, I suppose, the blue bloods, if you will. I guess that can sometimes be a concern where maybe there's not quite that familiarity that the fans have with the teams on the ice as they're going through the journey. But to me, having fresh teams is good. And also in hockey in particular, I think it's a very healthy thing for newer markets. Even the last 20 years, let's say, or a quarter century, the Columbus Blue Jackets, of course, they were an expansion team there in the later part of the 20th century. To have a chance now for them, I mean, after as well as they played in the first round, upsetting the Tampa Bay Lightning, who I thought was going to win the Stanley Cup, that to me is good for the league. It really allows a lot of new fans to feel good about their chances, and I think ultimately that helps grow the game a little more.
Good stuff. All right, that's the NHL picture. Is there anything else you would want to be able to say, or I should have asked you about the NHL in your mind?
The one thing I'll say is this. I mean, certainly, Clay, for our friends north of the border, it's tough. I mean, this has now been since '93, the last time a Canadian team won the Stanley Cup, and they had three teams in the first round this year. The Leafs, of course, losing Game 7. The Flames were the top seed out west, and then they lost in five games. The Jets, I thought they were as good of a chance as anybody out of the West to make it to the Cup Final, and they didn't. So, to me, for that streak to continue when you had three, I thought, legitimate chances entering the playoffs, and for all those three teams to be out after the first round is tough for my Canadian friends. Of course, I've got a lot of connections there, living so close to the border, and so I know it's certainly a difficult way to begin the postseason there for them.
All right, good stuff as always there on the NHL. Let's pivot now to baseball. Well, first of all, the NFL draft is today. You are a big Michigan football fan. Dwayne Haskins absolutely wrecked Michigan this year. Are you convinced that Dwayne Haskins is going to be a good NFL quarterback? How would you assess him, even though he obviously plays for your hated rival?
I think, Clay, that he is an excellent quarterback. I'm hearing my very wise football friends are advising me that he may well be going somewhere into the NFC East there with the Redskins or the Giants. There's two possibilities there. Obviously, as we know, great in the pocket and an excellent leader. I mean, we've seen him play. You look at his record, Clay, over his time at Ohio State. It's remarkable. He was someone who obviously was pushing for playing time when he was still an underclassman and was ready in the big moments when he was when he was put in there, and has had many, many big moments in Columbus, including, I go back to this, you know, as much as Ohio State absolutely dominated Michigan in their final game this year, the irony is, had it not been for the way Haskins played late and the heroics they had there in the second to last game of the year against Maryland, Michigan would have been playing in the Big Ten title game no matter how lopsided the final game was, because that would have been Ohio State's second loss in
right.
the Big Ten schedule. So I look at him as someone who's been great in the big moments. He's been in the big stage. I know certainly a lot of enthusiasm for Kyler Murray, but I think Haskins as good of a chance as any quarterback in this draft to have a great NFL career.
When you look, and this is a crazy stat I'm going to hit people with before we pivot to baseball. This is, I think, maybe the most extraordinary stat. I'm sure you'll hear it tonight when Dwayne Haskins is drafted, whether it's the Giants, whether it's the Redskins, or an unexpected team that decides to bring him in. This, to me, is just absolutely wild. When this will be, assuming he goes in the first round, the first Big Ten quarterback to be drafted in the first round since Kerry Collins in 1995.
Wow. That is staggering. And this is where, of course, you know, we know the GOAT himself, Tom Brady, was not drafted in the first round. But you look at all the amazing quarterbacks that come through this league. That is incredible.
Yeah.
And we've seen, you know, Michigan State's had some good quarterbacks, obviously, that have had solid NFL careers, and certainly, but I would say Ohio State with what they've had and their run of success. That is amazing to say. Stunning. Even Michigan's had a pretty good run of, you know, it was more of that vintage around when Brady was drafted and a little before then, all the Michigan quarterbacks at that time. But it's amazing to say that. And by the way, I was enjoying watching that the video of on the anniversary of Brady's draft. I remember going back to watch Mike Tirico then hosting the draft coverage. I just saw the clip on Twitter about you know, Mike talking about Tom Brady and his great experience there in the big moments, and Mel Kiper's comments about the lack of mobility. It's amazing to go back and look at some of the names and where they were drafted all those years ago. So someone tonight, no matter how much information they've got, Clay, someone tonight's going to make a big mistake, and someone tonight's going to get really lucky. We're not going to know it tonight, but it's going to happen. And it's important for all of us to remember there are no geniuses in pro sports. People, even the best executives, make mistakes. There is a high degree of fallibility there, especially in the draft. So let's not get too carried away with crowning Super Bowl champions here when the draft is over tonight.
Yeah, and this is what makes it so fun, is the idea that no matter who your team is, that if you squint the right way or if you project the best you can, you can look into the future. I mean, that's really what the draft represents. And by the way, yeah, look, there hasn't been a first-round Big Ten quarterback since 1995. Drew Brees, second-rounder. What is it, Tom Brady, you know, 199,
Six,
I think,
seven,
pick 199.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Then you also have Russell Wilson, if you want to count him, coming out of Wisconsin. Maybe he's an NC State guy, depends on how you want to classify it. And certainly Kirk Cousins came out of Michigan State and has, at minimum, made a lot of money for himself, even if the postseason results have not been there in the same way, just kind of ticking off a few Big Ten quarterbacks who have had success in the NFL. Okay, let's go to Major League Baseball quickly here. What is standing out? The Bryce Harper, I'll start with that. The Bryce Harper controversy, gets kicked out arguing balls and strikes. Then you have, I think it was his teammate, the pitcher, decide to kind of point
Jake
out,
Arrieta.
Yeah, Jake Arrieta, that was not the best move. Now, it kind of overshadowed a little bit the fact that they are tied for first place and that they've been decent out of the gate in the NL East. Big story, not a big story, lingering issues, no lingering issues. How would you assess this one?
Well, I think, Clay, that on some level it could be healthy that this issue came out into the forefront here in the last couple of days. In fact, Rhys Hoskins made that comment last night after their win over the Mets. He told the NBC Sports Philadelphia that basically his belief was that it was actually healthy that, you know, Jake made some very candid comments, and it wasn't just about Bryce. It was more just about the entire team's effort not being there. So I think when you've got a team that's got this level of expectations on them, And also this number of new faces who are big, prominent players. I mean, they added three all-star position players from last year's all-star teams in basically a month. And there's a lot of adjusting that goes on when that happens. So to me, Clay, it's part of an ongoing process for them of getting used to each other. And sometimes, you know, it may not be obvious to us, but sometimes that it's actually better for something like that to be out in the open than it is for it to be behind closed doors and that awkwardness there of people not knowing how they feel. So to me, Harper has played well enough. Certainly early on, he's got an OPS above 900. He's off to a very, very solid start, maybe even a very good start. So I would say Harper is not a problem for them. I'm a little worried about their starting pitching staff at times, but I think in general, when healthy, their lineup has been exactly as advertised, and there's nothing wrong with a veteran leader, someone who's got a World Series ring, and a Cy Young Award, by the way, calling out his teammates and saying that they've got to be a little bit better collectively.
Cardinals have to be one of the biggest surprises so far in the National League. What would you say about them? As they sit at the top of the NL Central, they are on a five-game winning streak, 7-3 in their last 10. Second overall, I think, in Major League Baseball when it comes to run differential. How would you assess the start of the year for the Cardinals?
Clay, to me, it's been the Goldschmidt effect. Paul Goldschmidt coming in there, doing for them what J.D. Martinez did for the Red Sox last year, which is lengthening the lineup and really allowing other players to see better pitches, other players to bat with men in scoring position more often. You've seen Paul DeJong's numbers go way up. I think that's been huge. We've seen Ozuna. I think Marcelo Ozuna, after a rough first year in St. Louis, he's been better this year. Dexter Fowler has bounced back. Colton Wong has bounced back. And by the way, both Wong and Fowler are batting down in the lower third of the lineup. So it's just that just tells you, at least on some occasions, how deep this lineup is and what Goldschmidt has done in terms of moving guys into more comfortable spots. And to me, 1-8, and now Yadier Molina's production is picking back up again. 1-8, they're as good, I think, as anybody in the league, in the National League, in terms of just their overall offensive depth. And then you look at the bullpen, I think it's been solid. It probably could get a little bit better, but it's been solid enough. And then the rotation, Adam Wainwright again this week with his start, he is turning back the clock. Like he is fantastic pitcher to watch. He's not throwing 92. He's barely even throwing 90. But his command of the baseball, his off-speed stuff, extraordinary. He's a great story for really, I think, a lot of the young pitchers around the game to watch, because he's not getting it done with velocity. He's just getting it done with knowing where to put the baseball and knowing how to change speed. So he's, I think, been a great story. And overall, the Cardinals' rotation's been good enough, and the lineup has been, I think, that's been the story of the year so far for St. Louis.
Okay, let's go Dodgers. You got Clayton Kershaw coming back. How is he looking? What would you say overall about the Dodger season so far? We're obviously on the Dodger affiliate out in L.A., sitting right at 15-11, top of the NL West.
Well, Kershaw, to me, Clay, has been better than I expected he was going to be coming back. You know, I was really nervous about that first start after just all the delays in getting ready, just not really seeming like he was healthy and prepared for the year. Not that it was any fault of his, just all the innings he's thrown in the last several years, especially in the playoffs. I think we're starting that up. So that to me is a really good sign for the Dodgers, just how Clayton is feeling. And, of course, they've had Ryu come back in the last week or so as well. So they're a team that I'm going to worry about their ability, the rotation, probably all season long, because we've now seen them let down and almost, to me, guys kind of run out of gas a little bit in the postseason each of the last 2 years. But now with Julio Urías, that's a really key arm for them up on the left side to keep Julio healthy. They're going to really want to watch his innings, and they'll probably do that. But, you know, we saw him basically throw a no-hitter for six innings, I believe it was, last week, and then have to leave the rotation after that because of guys that are coming back from injury. So, in general, I think that's a very good situation for him to be able to bounce back. Kenley Jansen better this year than he was last year, I think. And then in the lineup, we can't forget the guy that may well be the MVP in the National League, and that's Cody Bellinger. A swing adjustment. He seems to be much more comfortable. He's swinging at strikes. So his resurgence, Clay, to me, has been like getting a new player. He has been that good and better than basically any other hitter in the National League. So while some people, including myself, thought they probably could have done more in the offseason, it's hard for them to really be criticized too much because they've got the guy who's been, in my judgment, the biggest game changer in the National League so far this season. And that's Cody Bellinger.
Outstanding stuff as always. John Morosi, go follow him on Twitter, JonMorosi. Appreciate the time, my man.
Thanks, man. I'm disappointed myself that I did not have an NBA playoff take for you, besides the fact the Pistons were overmatched by the Bucks. But I will do better next time, my friend, to come up with something for you.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Chad Withrow with us now at Withrow Zone on Twitter. What do you expect tonight in Nashville? The weather may be a little bit shoddy. It might rain. How crowded do you expect this to be tonight?
Clay, actually, I think Young Buck got stabbed, went bankrupt, and he was a rap star, so a real triple threat.
Yeah, there you go.
Young Buck brings us back. I'm expecting insanity. It's amazing. I've been walking around downtown the last couple days. I know you've been down there as well, Clay, but just seeing how Broadway has transformed has been insane. I mean, it doesn't look like Broadway in spots because of all the television studios that sort of papered up Broadway as you look down, and the stage is enormous. I think it's going to be really crazy, and it's kind of full circle for the city of Nashville because, right or wrong, Nashvillians feel like Roger Goodell in the NFL kind of looks down at them. They never get the respect. They never get the love from the NFL. Remember, it was just a few years ago that the punishment for an officiating crew was to be moved from a national Sunday night game to officiate the Dolphins-Titans game. And that got out, and we made a big deal out of it. Like, wow, this is what the league thinks about the city of Nashville, is that the punishment for officials messing up is we're going to send you to Nashville to call the Titans-Dolphins game, which I thought the Titans ownership didn't do a good enough job of raising hell about that when they heard that. I thought it was a ridiculous thing. So now fast forward a few years later, and Nashville is front and center in the NFL universe. They've got the slogan, "Take the Stage," all over the city, which is apt being Music City. I think it's really cool to witness. And you know this, Clay. Nashville throws one hell of a party.
Yeah.
And that's what we're going to see on Broadway for the next 3 days. And really, it started yesterday with a huge crowd downtown.
Do you agree with me that this is in some ways an audition potentially for a Super Bowl? And what I mean by that for people out there who are listening is the general rule, it seems to me, is when you build a new stadium, if it is a dome, whether it's Indianapolis, whether it's Minneapolis, whether it is Dallas, you build a new stadium, Houston, and it's a dome so that the NFL can cover it up, Atlanta, you get a Super Bowl. And you have already a franchise, obviously, in your town. If Nashville were to build a retractable roof stadium, which is there's a dream of a lot of people doing, if that were to happen, do you feel like this could conceivably be an audition for the NFL to show that the city could handle it?
I don't think it's conceivable, Clay. I think if Nashville builds a dome or a retractable roof stadium, the Super Bowl will come to Nashville quickly. I think the cat's out of the bag at this point.
Yeah.
Nashville's going to do a great job hosting this event. Indianapolis hosted the Super Bowl. Indianapolis is a fine city. It's not Nashville. Nashville would crush hosting a Super Bowl. All it takes is that new stadium. Roger Goodell and the NFL, they've shown you build a stadium, they will come. And the Super Bowl will come to your city. I really think it's that simple. Maybe I'm off on that. Maybe there's something else holding Nashville back. I know there's talk of, you know, a lack of hotel rooms, which that's changing by the day with the amount of hotels going up around Nashville. But I don't think it's an audition. I think Nashville's already won. If they were ever to build a new stadium, that's when the Super Bowl would come to Nashville. But I'm also not one of these people that thinks, hey, you need to build a new stadium so we get a Super Bowl. I don't think the 1 or 2 weeks of a Super Bowl buildup in that event is worthy of a new stadium. You build the new stadium with a retractable roof when it's time to build the new stadium with a retractable roof. And now suddenly the time frame and the schedule for that has changed when you see a city like Atlanta, who built the Georgia Dome in 1992, you know, not even
the Georgia Dome was still nice.
Built a new stadium.
And then they just blew it up. I mean, like, the Georgia Dome was a lot nicer than many venues where they play big-time sporting events, and Atlanta was just like, screw it, we're going to blow it up. Now, part of that is if you got a guy like Arthur Blank, who is the Home Depot founder, who has billions of dollars and who wants to be leaving something behind as a member of, you know, kind of the city's civic virtue – that, I think, becomes a significant factor. I'm not sure that Nashville has that family or that wealth of somebody who would want to do it, but that's the best way to get a new stadium. You need an Arthur Blank. You need a Jerry Jones. You need somebody like a Kroenke who decides he wants to commit and they're going to build out in Inglewood like they're doing in L.A. right now. That's what you need to have, is somebody who's willing to kind of just make that statement and build that stadium and not as much worry about all the negotiations surrounding it when it comes to cost, because you're so wealthy, you can cover a lot of it. All right, so are you rooting for drama with Kyler Murray? Like, in an ideal world, do you think the draft becomes much better if he doesn't go number one and suddenly the upper part of the draft has a lot of drama? Because I am. As much as I enjoy watching Kyler Murray, if when the draft starts, the Arizona Cardinals come out, and or even more likely, as would probably be the case, tonight when I'm doing my show the hour beforehand, if we already know that Kyler Murray is going to be the first pick, I think it takes away a lot of the drama. I would like for a trade or something wacky to happen at the top of the draft.
Yeah, I'm rooting for drama. I'm a little bit torn because I really want to see Kyler Murray with Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
And see what they could do together with that offense in Arizona. But ultimately, I want chaos. And I love the fact that Daniel Snyder has just gone rogue and has decided to take over the draft, because we know that he loves Dwayne Haskins, who's from Maryland originally. He could probably sit where he is right now and still get Dwayne Haskins. But the amount of chaos that causes, I mean, I just imagine that story being out there yesterday, and his phone is just blowing up from GMs and owners all across the league trying to take advantage of Dan Snyder in some way. So, yes, with what you're saying, I'm rooting for Kyler Murray to not be picked number one overall, to see the dominoes that happens with that, with teams trying to trade up or get in a position to get him, and also the Daniel Snyder factor in Washington. I think that's a fascinating one to follow tonight. So if you couple both of those together, we're going to have a very entertaining first night of the draft here in Nashville.
What do you buy into here with my prom theory? And my prom theory is this. You went to prom. Everybody out there, it's prom season across the nation. When you're going to prom, what are you trying to do? Maximize your draft potential, right? If you're a guy or a girl, you want to get the best candidate you can. You don't want to undersell yourself, but you also don't want to oversell yourself and then end up with nothing, right? Like, you're going to, oh, I'm going to get the head cheerleader, and then you're like, you have no real shot at her. Everybody knows there's always some guy who way overshoots himself, and then he either doesn't go, or like he's suddenly, you know, going with a sophomore who he's had to pull up, you know, from the lower ranks. I think that they're in the back of their mind right now, the Arizona Cardinals are thinking, man, I don't know who else is going to take Kyler Murray if we don't take him number one overall. And I also think the Giants are thinking this. I think they're thinking, well, we'd like to get a defensive player at six and take our quarterback at 17. What do you do? How do you balance it out? It's game theory. It's the prom. It's the draft. How would you make decisions? Would you just say, screw it, if I like a quarterback, I'm getting him, I don't care about anything else? Or would you try to maximize things based on kind of the game theory aspect?
Yeah, I mean, in high school, we're going to go with the prom analogy here. In high school, if I'm drafting, I would go after the captain of the cheerleading squad slash homecoming queen slash student body president, the girl who encompasses everything.
Right.
So I'm going for the best available prospect, and I'm swinging for the fences. But, Clay, to continue your prom analogy with this, because I think it's an apt one, think about the Chargers with Eli Manning. You know, there's also guys that go to the prom, and they have to decide, do I want to take a friend of mine and hope that she maybe likes me?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those like, hey, I know she really gets along with my group of guys that we're going to go to the melting pot and have fondue together, and it's going to be a lot of fun, but I'm not sure that she's into me.
Yeah.
You know, you may make an advance at some point, and she's completely not into it. That was sort of the Chargers guessing game with Eli Manning, that, of course, they figured out he wasn't going to be a Charger, so they traded to the Giants and ended up with Phillip Rivers. That's also something you have to weigh going into the draft. But, I mean, in terms of who you're looking at, I mean, you swing for the fences. You go for the homecoming queen.
Would you want to go to the draft? If you were potentially a first-round pick, would you want to be there to walk up on stage and give Roger Goodell a hug and also kind of, you know, get all that attention? Or would you rather be back privately at a party just kind of waiting it out without having to be there in the public venue?
Clay, this is it's a great question, and honestly, my opinion has changed over the last week. Just seeing the construction of the stage in Nashville, seeing the overall project that is an NFL draft, and we've been to a lot of Super Bowls, so we see the amount of effort put into it by the NFL. For years, I would have said I would stay home. I'd want to have my own private party, have my friends and family over, be relaxed, have my own snacks there and enjoy it on television. Having seen this, though, in Nashville this week, I think it would be really cool to get that taste of this event, to be here in a hotel, to have your agent with you, to be around the setup, to do events leading up to the draft. You know, you're probably going to get some sponsorship deals to go do some things in the city where the draft is. I think now that the draft is rotating and going to different places, I would absolutely want to be there and walk across the stage and give the big man hug to Roger Goodell. I think that's the play.
All right, so Kyler Murray didn't show up at the charity event yesterday in Nashville that every other draft pick who is here was there for. Red flag, strange. Like, I know we've talked about this on the air, I think, but off the air too, that there's something that just seems a little bit off about the way that Kyler Murray has gone about making his decision to come into the draft. You know, the interview with Dan Patrick, which was so awkward, all the drama about Major League Baseball versus the NFL, which is great for him. The fact that he really hasn't been that public in terms of what he's done and what he has said. And then you miss a big charity event in the city that's holding the draft that every other draft pick shows up for. It just seems a little bit off to me.
Yeah, and the deal with Dan Patrick, correct me if I'm wrong, Clay, he threw him the NFL football and he said, does that feel good in your hands? And he was trying to kind of joke with him about him playing NFL football, and he just wouldn't give an answer. There was just silence.
I mean, it was incredibly awkward, and you knew already that you were going to get – I mean, look, if you're going to take money to go do interviews around the Super Bowl, then you're a prominent sports figure – you know what questions you're going to get asked, and it's like, why are you taking whatever? You know, somebody gives him $500,000, right? And that's probably maybe a little bit too high. Why are you taking that money if you don't know what you're going to do? And so I thought it was really strange the way – and then, I mean, not showing up for the charity event, I actually am surprised it's not getting more attention, but – every other draft pick was there. This is something that's been on their schedule for months. This is a standard thing to do. And I'm not saying like, oh, he doesn't care about the charity event. I'm just like, you knew this was coming. How are you not there? It makes me think there might be some behind-the-scenes drama, and that's why he wasn't there. I mean, I don't know. I think it's strange.
Yeah, here's my view on Kyler Murray. I think he's getting terrible advice from someone. Maybe it's his dad. Maybe it's his agent. I wouldn't think that an agent would be behind that. I think Kyler Murray, and this is no knock on the kid as a player and how good of a quarterback he can be in the league. I really don't think ultimately this has anything to do with his ability to play quarterback. I think he's very socially immature. He's athletically mature, athletically intelligent. I think he's socially immature and socially just not very intelligent. Just like you said, Clay, you're on Radio Row at the Super Bowl. You're going to be asked about your NFL future. To agree to show up and do that and to go through interviews like that was a completely idiotic move by him or whoever had him do that. He just strikes me as a kid who's very uncomfortable in those settings, but is probably very comfortable in a locker room and in a huddle and with his teammates. Now, that is something that can develop over time. It's also something we've seen, you know, I recall Vince Young here in Nashville. We always thought, hey, this is going to get better with time. You know, his ability to command a room, his ability to talk with media, everything else will get better. Sometimes it doesn't get better. And there's a lot of examples of that across the league. You know, I don't think this has anything to do with him as a player, and it wouldn't slow me down from drafting him at all. But I think with Kyler Murray, he just, again, I don't know him. Just listening to him in interviews and seeing things like this go down strikes me as someone that's just very socially immature. And again, he's very young. It's something that can change. But I also think he's getting terrible advice from someone. I don't know who that someone is, but for him to do the Dan Patrick interview that way, for him to be trotted out on Radio Row that way, someone's giving him terrible advice.
What letter grade would you give the Game of Thrones episode 2, season 8?
Solid B+. I thought it was better than the first episode. Here's my theory on this, Clay. I think that what we saw in Season 8, Episode 1, Winterfell, and Part 2, I think that was originally a two-hour premiere. I think that was one episode that they had to break up for some reason.
Oh.
The way that it was shot. I think that the whole build-up to the Battle of Winterfell that we're going to see in Episode 3, which is maybe one of the greatest episodes in television history, I think that was supposed to be one episode originally. I think they were going to have all of these supersized episodes, and they decided at some point, HBO did, to break it up into more episodes. So we really saw one long episode, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Other than that quick visit to King's Landing, it was all in Winterfell. It was all about tying up loose ends. It was all about getting some of our favorite characters on screen together, some for the first time, some of them reunions. It really looked to me like one long episode. If that's the case, I enjoyed the second half of that long episode, which we saw on Sunday night, more than the first. The meeting by the fireplace was outstanding.
Yeah, do you
with everyone.
Do you think that episode 3, which is airing on Sunday, will be the greatest 1.5 hours in television history? Is that too high of a bar?
No, it's not. I think it's going. It's. Let me put it this way. I think from a writing standpoint and a plot standpoint, there are, you know, episodes of Breaking Bad, for instance, that will be better than this episode. From a sheer scale standpoint of how big this episode is going to be and how they took, what, 50 nights to shoot this battle that we're going to see in this next episode, I don't think we're ever going to see anything like it on television. I mean, it's a movie. And it's not only a movie, it's a big-budget Hollywood film that we're going to watch on HBO on Sunday night. So from that standpoint, I don't think we've ever seen anything like what we're going to see Sunday night. So it will be the biggest single episode in television history. I'm not ready to call it the best because I don't know any way that the writing of it could be equal to some other shows that we've seen.
Outstanding stuff as always. Chad Withrow at Withrow Zone.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
I'm intrigued to see what's going to happen with quarterback position. I think there's probably the most drama surrounding that. Let's assume that Kyler Murray goes number one overall. Because if he doesn't go number one overall, then the storylines become infinitely more intriguing because the question would be who else is really interested in Kyler Murray other than the Arizona Cardinals. I think this is a situation where if he didn't go number one overall, he could fall to 10, 15. Who knows exactly where he would end up, where before a team might make a decision to trade up and get him, or does he have an incredibly long wait in the draft room? It would be intriguing to think about and see. So that story in and of itself is worth following. But I'm still going to assume he goes number one overall. Even if that happens, still a lot of drama. Where's Drew Locke going to go? What is going to happen with Dwayne Haskins? And what's the story going to be with Daniel Jones? Not to mention, is there a possibility Will Greer could sneak up at the end of the draft at the first round? Why? Well, I thought yesterday we were talking with Albert Breer, and it's a very good point. Teams like to know that they have a quarterback potentially for 5 years. And as long as you are drafted in the first round, the team has an option for year five. So if you're trying to decide, it's like what happened with Lamar Jackson last year. A lot of times at the very end of the NFL draft, a team in the first round will make a move up to get a quarterback because they say, okay, we got 4 years at a relatively low cost. When you consider Ben Roethlisberger just got an extension, when you consider what you're having to pay now for a quarterback, $25, $30, even $35 million now a year. If you get a quarterback in the first round and he ends up being decent, you're getting him at a very, very affordable price for the first 5 years of his deal. And we've seen teams be really smart, whether it's the Seahawks, whether right now it's the Kansas City Chiefs, with being able to make a run because their quarterback is, whether it's Russell Wilson, whether it is with the Kansas City Chiefs right now and everything they are able to do with Patrick Mahomes, if you are able to get a guy really affordable under his rookie year contract and he outperforms your expectations, you can afford to spend a lot of money around him without having to pay him what his overall value is. So that becomes pretty significant, and I think there's a good chance that at least four. I think it's a no-brainer to me that Drew Locke, that Kyler Murray, that Dwayne Haskins, and that Daniel Jones are going to go in the first round. And it wouldn't stun me if Will Greer, because a lot of teams like him, ends up at the end of the first round. Now, in our mock draft that we did with Outkick, we had five guys go in the top five quarterbacks go in the top 15. That ain't going to happen. But it wouldn't stun me at all if we had five quarterbacks go in the top 32.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.